Radio Influence. The future is now.
With the Crusher, Jeff Crochelle. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Hey, and welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crochelle. The con man is here keeping us on track, and we're your weekly source for performance information. Hey, if you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, do get to us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Info at CrushPerformance is the email. If you want to follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and on Facebook, just go to Crush Performance, and you can go to all of our pages there. We're in a constant hunt to find new ways of pushing human performance, and there's one thing I can tell you. We're sort of at a ceiling when it comes to the physical side of helping our athletes achieve their potential. When it comes to getting stronger, getting faster, getting more agile, when it comes to acquiring skills necessary for performance in sport, we pretty much have it mastered. The only limitation there is time. And I guess if you want to get technical, willingness from the participant, which is the athletes. But most of the athletes we get our hands onto are so motivated, that's never an issue. Most of them are just lacking guidance as to what they should be doing and which direction they should be working in order to achieve their potential. And on the other side of that, you know, it's been interesting. The last couple of years, I've been working with a couple hockey agents, and it's been a fascinating experience for me. And helping this one group of younger athletes, junior level, high school, junior level, elite hockey players with really bright futures, interacting with the families, and just understanding the mindset and the pressure and I guess just the urgency they feel at that level to be accomplished high-performing athletes was really an eye-opener. And again, my world has been high-performance sport for over 25 years, and I've been lucky enough to work with some of the best athletes at the highest level of sport where, you know, they're a little more mature or they at least understand the process of development. But when you get down to sort of that entry level junior athlete, and you really start tapping into where their mindsets are at and where the people around them are at in terms of their thinking, it's pretty frustrating. I can see why a lot of athletes really do fall off the charts and don't reach their potential. There's too much pressure, and we're in too much of a rush to achieve high performance. It's a long game, ladies and gentlemen. It's a long game, and you have to keep your eye on the prize. Now, I'm not saying that you can't make incredible progress, because you can. Listen, if you've never been in a real structured program before, there can be miracles that happen if you get organized, get focused, and get deliberate in your approach to your development. And when it comes to the physical side again, there's no doubt we're pretty much at a ceiling when it comes to that level. Just time and willingness and, you know, the resources to get that done. That being said, we're constantly looking for ways to improve performance. And honestly, I think that if we look at where we're at in sport right now, there's a couple of areas where we're really going to be able to tap into. And actually, I believe they're going to be the areas that push human performance forward in the near future. And of course, that's technology. Technology, not just in terms of sport equipment, but technology that's helping us understand how athletes operate. The bio-neurofeedback, the brain scans, the biochemistry, you know, the smartwatches and the feedback and the data we're now accumulating because of high-speed film, 3D analysis, computer-generated breakdowns of sport performance. It's all fantastic stuff and very useful if you have a plan. And one of the areas that I think, you know, for most sports, actually every sport that is relatively untapped is the area of visual performance. And of course, in my time in professional baseball, that is one of the top priorities. But surprisingly enough, there's very few teams, organizations, and almost no developmental programs that really try to tap into the visual performance. I think in large part because we don't really have a good understanding of what it's all about, at least on the big scheme of things. So I wanted to just revisit this area of development because it's always fascinated me. You know, when I did my degree at University of Calgary up in Canada, I was lucky enough to be around Dr. Joan Vickers, who was doing some groundbreaking research in sport vision, but more about gaze control, where athletes are looking. But she discovered this phenomenon called the quiet eye phenomenon. And I actually volunteered as a young student to be in as many of her research projects as possible, just to tap into and understand what this was all about. It's pretty fascinating stuff. We've come a long, long way since then. Trust me, that was a while ago. But that being said, there's been so many breakthroughs in technology that's now allowing us to understand, analyze, and get a better read at where we're at in terms of visual performance, that we're doing things now that we were never able to do before. Well, one of the leading minds in the world of visual performance is Dr. Daniel Labey, the director of the Sports and Performance Vision Center at the State University of New York College of Optometry. And Dr. Labey's worked in a multitude of different sports at the highest levels, but he's also very, very keen on the developmental model and the long-term impact of actually training and developing visual performance. His work goes well, well beyond the world of sports. But it's always interesting to see where some of the leading minds are at. And we're joined right now by Dr. Daniel Labey. Dr. Labey, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jeff. My pleasure.
Well, it's been some time since we've had you on the show and since you and I have talked. And it's always amazing to me to see how technology is pushing what we learn, but also just over time, how much more we learn as time progresses. And when we look at vision and performance and the impact of vision and performance and what we know about vision, that's no exception. There's been plenty of progress in this area.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's actually interesting, you know, as you get older, time seems to move faster. And in the 25 years I'm doing sports vision, it just seems to be moving faster and faster every year, which is exciting and at the same time somewhat intimidating. But a lot has happened in the last 4 or 5 years since we've had a chance to sit down and talk.
Yeah, well, Dr. Labey, let's get back to your grassroots here. What stirred you into the area of vision performance and sports vision? Because it's turned into almost an industry unto itself.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost a fluke. You know, you get into something that you tend to take over your professional career almost by accident. It was a research project in UCLA when I was in Los Angeles in the early 90s, 92, that some work had been done with the LA Dodgers baseball team, and I came in to work there. And I was basically offered to go through the data, try to write it up, make some sense out of it. And I kind of reluctantly agreed. I was there to do eye alignment and cross-eyed kids, and this was totally out of that realm, but it looked somewhat interesting. And I just kind of got into it, got wrapped up in it, and it's just grown and evolved ever since, to the point that now pretty much that's most of what I do is sports vision, performance vision, trying to get people to use their vision to perform, whether it's on the field or on the road or in life, at their maximum ability.
Well, let me ask you this, and that's a pretty interesting story, because it is funny sometimes how you sort of just fall into things. It seems to be the ebb and flow, but I'm really glad that you fell into this, because some of the work that you've done has been pioneering, to say the least, and I'm really excited every time I get to talk to you, because I truly do believe that vision is still one of those really untapped areas of potential for athletes. And as you mentioned, you know, in our talk prior to the interview here, its implications in everyday life, like driving or with the military or, you know, with our first responders or our police. There's so many applications when it comes to vision and vision performance. I think sometimes it's well underestimated, you know, just certainly in the sports world, but just in general, I believe.
Yeah, you know, in the sports world, it's underestimated because certain teams kind of appreciate the role of vision and performance, and it's not just baseball. It's in football, it's in hockey, it's in lacrosse, in a myriad of sports, soccer. There's vision in every single one of them. A paper we wrote about the U.S. Olympic team at the Beijing Olympics in 2008 highlighted the differences in vision of different sports, boxers versus archers versus field hockey. And it's not a question of who has the best vision, it's who has the best visual match for what they need to perform in that sport. So there's a lot in sports, but besides that information, what's really exciting is to be able to transfer that information, that knowledge that we have from elite athletics, into something that's useful for, you know, everybody else on the planet, which is, you know, by far the overwhelming majority of people on the planet. Even things, for example, driving here in Manhattan, the city of New York, that's really akin to navigating, you know, a football gridiron or to trying to take a basketball down the court. You have multiple targets. You have multiple people coming at you at the same time. You have to plan an action ahead of time. You have to see the friendlies, if you will, to who you're going to pass it to. That requires concentration, multiple target tracking, eye-hand coordination, foot-eye coordination, anticipation. All of those different measures fall into play both on the athletic field as well as on the driving field, if you will. And we all know that, you know, sometimes drivers make mistakes and there are serious accidents, and that's something that we hope to reduce. I even have someone who has low vision that I'm seeing in the office now who has a syndrome called Usher syndrome, which really robs them of their hearing as well as their vision, and leaves people basically blind and deaf, very, very significant condition. But that's a slow process. And as that vision is deteriorating, we can still try to enhance someone's use of that vision, just like we do on the athletic field, to use what they have more efficiently and make it more effective in total. And there's a patient I have that we've done a lot with her on that, and we've actually improved her ability to use what she has significantly to make her feel not quite as handicapped as she had previously. And so these technologies, this experience can really be transferred to a myriad of different people in many different conditions, which is really the role of physicians, I think, and the role of science is to try to gain knowledge to help everybody, not just a small group.
We're talking with Dr. Daniel Labey, the Director of Sports and Performance Vision Center at the State University of New York College of Optometry. Dr. Labey, some very interesting stuff there. It's really fascinating to me to get into the vision side because, you know, my role in the high-performance world has always been to try to help athletes, teams, and organizations get the most out of their potential. And, you know, we look at in the physical side of sport performance, you know, getting faster, getting stronger, getting more powerful. That's really easy now because we know what we're doing there. And we basically, I think, really hit a ceiling when it comes to that. Because if we want to make an athlete faster, we can get that athlete as fast as that athlete can be. We just need time and the resources to do it. So we're always looking for these interesting areas where we have an opportunity to push performance. And in the baseball world, well, any sport, we look at basketball and hockey, even soccer, and there's not a sport out there where vision doesn't play a role. Where do you think we're at currently, Dr. Labey, in our understanding of what's going on in vision? Because there's been some great, great advances here, even in the last couple of years.
Frankly, I think we're at about the second grade level. We passed kindergarten, we're out of nursery school, we're not in diapers anymore. But we're nowhere near middle school and certainly not at the high school or the college level in our knowledge of how this whole system works. And a lot of that has to do with our lack of understanding of how our brain works and how our brain is able to process visual information and translate it into a decision and then a following motor action. One of the things I think over the last few years that has really crystallized in my thinking of how vision and sports come together is the understanding that really the eyeball and the eye itself, although critically important, is really a small piece of the entire puzzle for performance overall. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people get fixated on what the eye does and how the eye alignment is and how the use of both eyes work together is and so forth and lose the higher level functions such as the processing of visual information in the higher levels of the brain, areas of the brain that have to make decisions, areas of the brain that have to make a reaction, areas of the brain that have to target or track multiple targets or concentrate on a single target. Those are areas that use that visual information but integrate it together with other areas of the brain to cause an effect and cause an action. Even the role of something that, you know, there was a Nobel Prize in economics provided not too long ago for the role of bias in decision-making. And what we have learned, I think, is that in visual information and visual decision-making, there is bias as well. And if we can limit that visual bias, we can have people perform better also. And so we have to learn, we know a lot about the eyes, but we have to learn a lot more about how the brain uses visual information and how the brain makes decisions based on visual information. And I think that's what's going to carry us through middle school into high school and hopefully get to a point where we can really evaluate, benchmark somebody against what's normal, and then devise ways to intervene to hopefully improve the ability and then test if that improves performance on the field or on the roads or whatever. And I think that's when we'll really be at the point of graduating and having something that is really fully fully baked, if you will. And I think right now I find it so exciting because it's an open field. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot of interdisciplinary information to learn about different neurologic processes, decision-making, psychological processes, all of which tie into visual function of the eye, but aren't directly related to the eyeballs themselves.
Huh, interesting stuff. Dr. Labey, would you say the eyeballs, I mean, just to put it in simple terms, it's sort of our first line of defense or offense, depending on how you're looking at it. So the concept of 20/20 is sort of the standard that we would look at the function of the eyeball. Is that fair to say in your mind right now?
Well, that's only one very slim function of the eyeball, is the ability to resolve an opening or to see something clearly. That's the 20/20 number. But there are many other shades of visual function that go beyond that. For example, contrast, the ability to detect something light against the background. That's something that's similar to sharpness of vision, like the 20/20 number, but is a kind of different function. The ability to react and process the visual information quickly is a different function. In fact, if you look carefully at the way visual pathways work, information leaves the eyeball and goes back into the brain, and most of that information goes directly back into what we call the visual cortex, which is the vision part of the brain all the way in the back part of our head. But there's some of those fibers actually go off and move directly up into the brain much sooner. And there are people that have what's called cortical blindness. They can't see anything because their brain part of their visual cortex in the back of their head is not working for whatever reason, but they can still detect motion because the motion fibers bypass that part of the brain and go directly into higher levels of detection. And so you really can't think about vision as a one piece of information. It's really multifaceted with many different things, from contrast to acuity to motion detection. And each one is processed differently and moves through the brain differently through different pathways. And often they come together in a decision. But each one is separate and has to be evaluated separately and tested and enhanced if necessary, depending on what you find.
All right. Well, you just sort of revealed my secret strategy for when I run into a Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know, with the vision and the movement side, because my understanding, my whole life existence, when I run into this guy, my understanding is based on his visual performance and visual systems where he can only see me when I move. So that's a pretty interesting strategy. But that's
exactly.
Fascinating. Yeah, that's fascinating to think about. And it's interesting, you know, if we look at what you mentioned earlier about sort of, you know, the visual match for sports, this is an interesting dynamic now. And Dr. Labey, if we looked at athletes, and you and I've talked about this before, if we looked at athletes from different sports, you know, there's this sort of process through the developmental years of self-selection where athletes gravitate, or people just gravitate towards things they're good at. And would it be safe to say, if we take a game like baseball, for example, people with really good vision or visual performance or whatever term we would use would gravitate towards a game like baseball because they have just the genetic makeup or the performance factors that would allow them to be successful? This is a parameter, I think, that's pretty interesting, because in some of your research, when you looked at Major League Baseball players, they have much better than average vision.
Yeah, it's really a pedigree. You know, each different sport has a different requirement for the visual package, if you will, or the entire visual system's abilities. And, you know, there is many, many stories of very successful, you know, athletes in basketball, for example, who then try baseball, and they're athletic, so they can do a little bit, but they're not going to be the same as someone who is a baseball player, even though they're a wonderful basketball player, because the visual profile of a basketball player, what they need is very different than what the visual profile of a baseball player is. With the Olympic team, we found that the boxers, for example, don't have great visual acuity, sharpness, but they don't need it because the target is close, but they have pretty good depth perception. Whereas the archers had wonderful sharpness of vision, but they had terrible depth perception. It all makes sense because the archery target is flat and there's no 3D, three dimensions to the target. And they usually are monocular, looking at one eye at the sight and the other eye at the target in archery. And so they're not using both eyes together. So you wouldn't expect good depth perception, but they better see sharply because the target is far away and the target is very small. Whereas the boxers need to have 3D vision because they're having to judge how far their opponent is and how close the oncoming punch is and so forth. The fencers, excellent depth perception, probably the best, I think, overall. if you're fencing, obviously you need to have very good depth perception. So you can almost take a young kid who's athletic, look at their visual abilities, and maybe put a little bit extra time in to make sure they're able to work even better in the sports that they match to, as opposed to sports they just may enjoy, but probably don't have a chance to become elite at. You know, you have this 10,000 hour rule that you've probably heard about, and you can't spend 10,000 hours in multiple things. There isn't time for that. You'd have to devote yourself, your energies, your training to a single task if you want to become an expert in 10,000 hours. And maybe a visual assessment can help people understand which area they may be more adept at and be more successful at than other areas.
We're talking with Dr. Daniel Labey, the director of the Sports and Performance Vision Center at the State University of New York College of Optometry. Dr. Labey, this opens up a very interesting question. So we bring a group of athletes to your clinic, and we don't really look at, you know, what sport they're involved in, but we want to evaluate maybe just their genetic visual performance, what they're at, where they're at right now. Here's a big question for you. You have an athlete that you evaluate and you get a score or a multitude of scores, but you get a real good profile of their visual performance, their visual package, so to speak. How much can we influence that through training? And what would the strategies be? Because this is a real area of untapped potential in a lot of different sports.
So I think there's two questions in that one question. The first question is, can we improve the visual function to have them score better on the visual function task? The other question is, does improving that visual function on that task translate into better on-field performance? Hmm. And those are absolutely critical questions. The first one, we're pretty good at most all these visual functions of being able to improve them. The piece that we don't yet have, I think, adequate data, and there's small studies, but nothing adequate in terms of numbers, is does that improved ability then translate into improved on-field performance? And that's the million-dollar question, because that's really where we're looking to see our benefit. Improving a visual skill doesn't really do a whole lot, but we certainly want to improve the visual function.
Yeah, no, and so that's pretty interesting, because it's all about improving performance, no question about that. So if we were to look at, so we have an athlete that comes in, and let's say we get a number like a 20/20, or maybe they have poor vision. So we would, step number one in your mind, we would try to correct that, right? We try to make sure they have the best information possible going into the brain. How much can we influence the brain, what the brain does with that information, Dr. Labey? I guess maybe that's what we're talking about here. That might be the next bastion in terms of visual performance, is really understanding how we can work with the brain to better understand what we're seeing.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, I think about all these different processes as a matter of floodgates or thresholds. What we found, for example, in baseball, that if you're 20/20, you're behind the eight ball. You don't have the vision you need to identify the spin and the finger placement as the ball is released, you know, about 55, 60 feet away from you, and you only have a tenth of a second to see it. At 20/20, that's not good enough to resolve that. You need 20/15 or better. Average 20/12, you need 20/15 or better. But if you're 20/10 or 20/8, the truth is we see no indication that that makes you hit more pitches or be more successful.
Hmm.
There are other factors down the stream, if you will, that could interfere with your ability. And so you need to have a minimum ability in each of these different thresholds or floodgates or points along the visual pathway in order to perform well. And if, let's say, you one of the last points you were really, really good, but one of the first points you're really bad, the vision never gets to the good part to be leveraged, because it's not good enough coming in. Garbage in, garbage out. And so what we need to look at is, how much do we improve it? Do we improve it to the point of not making that an issue anymore? And if we get all those issues cleared, how well does someone perform? So it's not just improving any one task. And we can improve hand-eye coordination if we train you on that. I can improve your reaction time. I can improve your ability to target and track multiple targets. I can certainly improve your visual acuity, your sharpness. All those things can be improved. But if there's any stop along the way that's not what it needs to be, all that improvement is for naught, because the entire process is not fully efficient.
Interesting stuff. We're talking with Dr. Daniel Labey, the director of the Sports and Performance Vision Center at the State University of New York. Dr. Labey, so let's get back to this conversation. Michael Jordan leaves basketball and tries baseball. And right now we've got a very interesting experiment going on. We have Tim Tebow, who is sort of out of the football realm now, trying to make his way in the baseball world as well. I find this pretty fascinating because, as you mentioned, these are both incredible athletes that are struggling terribly in the world of baseball. But that is an interesting perspective. Maybe they just don't have the tools to do it. Would Michael Jordan have been better off to get on the mound and try to pitch? Would Tim Tebow, rather than trying to hit that ball, maybe because just the visual performance isn't there, also be better off getting on the mound trying to pitch? It's an interesting question we've raised there.
That is a good question. And if you think about it, you know, these guys are taller guys and pitchers tend to be taller. You know, that's a mechanical requirement to pitch more successfully. But think about both these guys, both a quarterback and, you know, a basketball player. Their skill is in being able to track multiple people coming at them from the same, you know, at the same time, to be able to plan a visual path to perform a motor action with multiple targets at the same time. That's very different than hitting a baseball. Hitting a baseball, it's you against the pitcher, and all you have to do is hit the ball as it comes towards you. There's no one else coming towards you. There's nothing else happening at that moment. It's purely you against the baseball. That's a very different task than running down a basketball court and looking at who's there, or being a quarterback and commanding the field and being able to identify oncoming threats and who you want to make a pass to or hand off to. So the visual skills, the motor skills, the decision-making process, it's almost night and day. It's almost like driving in Manhattan versus driving in the country, you know, in upstate New York, for example. The visual requirements of those two tasks are so different that it's hard to decide someone who's good at one is going to be good or bad at the other. And I think you may be right. Pitching might be the most akin to what they did before because of the physical size and the mechanics involved in throwing a football versus or similar possibly to throwing a baseball.
Well, I can kind of attest. I'm a country boy. And when I go to New York, let me tell you, I am way, way out of my element. You know, we actually relocated to Toronto when I was with the Blue Jays. And the one thing, the one variable that really struck me for our entire time there, the one thing I couldn't get used to was the traffic. It is just so different, but it's all the time. Driving home at 1 in the morning is like driving at rush hour out here in a smaller center. So it's interesting. Let me ask you this, Dr. Labey. If we have an athlete or a person that has, you know, some performance goals and they're in the pathway of developing those performance potentials, how much can we influence the actual brain's role in this whole scenario? We know what's going into the eyes. Let's just say we've really got them tuned into what they should be looking at, where they should be looking, and they've got good vision, good information going into the brain. How much can we then influence how the brain operates? Can we speed it up? Can we actually influence the brain's processing speed?
Well, I think so. The concept that's been around for a little while called neuroplasticity. The concept of by experience and by training being able to change the way neurons fire, how they fire together and how they then work to have a more efficient effect on a motor action or decision process. And I think there's many different systems that kind of go just past the visual part, so I'm not too involved in how they work, but they do involve training the brain, if you will, to be more efficient in using and making decisions. Also in planning, there's and I don't have any financial connection to any of these companies, but one example is something called IntelliGym.
Yes.
Is a system, you know, that in basketball, hockey, and so forth, that is designed to allow people to become more efficient at planning a movement or decision. There's another one, Halo Neuroscience, which works with electrostimulation to try to raise the threshold of firing to allow neurons that would otherwise not fire together, fire more together to be more efficient in their action. A lot of these systems still require some more validation, some more kind of independent research to show that they really do what they're purporting to do. But they're all moving the same direction to try to increase the efficiency of the brain's functions as related to sport.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. We're talking with Dr. Daniel Labey, the director of the Sports and Performance Vision Center at the State University of New York College of Optometry. Dr. Labey, listen, it's really fascinating stuff. And I think the implications, as you mentioned earlier, go well beyond sport. You guys are doing some really, really interesting work with drivers there in Manhattan, and I could see the value there. Heck, I can see you guys getting hired by insurance companies to start training drivers to see better. It's not a bad plan, actually, now that I think of it. But let me ask you this. We talk about, you know, the visual performance, and how important is it, do you think, just in the teaching process? Let's go back to your work in baseball, because in my humble opinion, you are a major influencer in player performance when it comes to the game of baseball, and you've done a ton of work there. You've been associated with some World Series champions, division champions, and that's not a mistake. In one of the papers that you've written in the past, there was a little paragraph that was titled, "Could Ted Williams See the Ball Hit the Bat?" And, you know, there's a really mixed, I guess, opinion on whether athletes can actually track that ball right to the bat or not. But how much do you think we can improve that type of performance when we're tracking and trying to give ourselves the best opportunity for success in sport?
Yeah, one of the areas that I've tried to address over the years is to separate the hearsay from the fact, we'll call it, from the weeds, from the, you know, from the view of the whole harbor.
Right.
And unfortunately, this tracking question is something that persists, and, you know, I think ingrained when you're in Little League, you know, people understand to watch the ball and track it and try to see yourself putting a bat on the ball and so forth. But that actually can work, I think, to harm people. For example, when Ted Williams, whether he saw or not, and I never had a chance to ask, but whether he saw the ball hit the bat or not actually is irrelevant, because anything that he saw at that moment, he couldn't affect, he couldn't change, he couldn't do anything about. It takes a finite amount of time, a real finite amount of time, to make a neural signal, have the muscles contract, and have that affect the change on where the bat's position is and whether it's going to hit the ball one way or another. And that time is an infinity compared to the point of seeing the ball approach the bat. In fact, you really have to start your swing at least 150 or 200 milliseconds before the ball reaches the bat if you want to have any effect. And you've seen people try to check their swings, and sometimes it's disastrous because you see them at the last moment trying to check it, and it's way too late just because it doesn't happen fast enough. When you see the ball hit the bat has no influence on where the ball goes or how well you hit the ball, because anything you see there can't make a difference. And people keep looking at that, and it's a disservice to little leaguers to teach them to watch that, because they may be good at that, but when they start facing pitchers who throw faster, that skill will then not be useful, and they won't know what to do in terms of seeing the ball early in the trajectory and deciding where it's going to pass the plate from that information. And that's a skill that they have to learn early on so that they can continue to perform not only in the junior league, little league, but higher up into high school or college baseball. And that's a very critical skill to pick up, to be able to see the pitch in the first 100 milliseconds or so of its movement, pick out what pitch is going to be, and plan the motor action to intercept that with the bat at the proper time in the right place.
No, so right. And that's what we've done too. We're now teaching athletes where to look and pick up the ball as soon as possible to sort of get ahead of the game, if that makes sense, Dr. Labey.
Yeah, that's the whole point. If the batter can get ahead of the pitcher and he can know what pitch is going to be even before the ball's released, so much the better. You know, if he's able to pick up a foot position, a hand position, a glove position, the arm slot as the ball comes over the shoulder, that information is free because the ball hasn't been thrown yet, and they can use that information and confirm it with the other information once the ball is released, as opposed to making a first assessment at release. The more you're ahead of that, the certainly the better you're going to be at hitting the pitch.
Oh, great stuff, Dr. Labey. So, listen, I really appreciate your time today. This has been a fantastic conversation, and I think for athletes, parents, coaches out there, this is a conversation they need to really listen to and dig down deep because there's a lot of great performance potential out there. So, Dr. Labey, let me ask you this before we let you go. What's next? What's next in the world of a sport vision? Because I hear what you're saying. We're sort of at the grade two level, kindergarten, grade one, grade two level. So where do we go from here, Dr. Labey?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, the main thing is we need more practitioners who look at this scientifically, look at it from the point of view of a physician, you know, where we would never prescribe a pill unless we had, you know, approved by the FDA and we had research that the pill really works. We need to have that same approach with athletics and performance vision. We need to have good science And for that, we need more people to do the science. And so my hope is in the very short term, we'll have many more people. And here at the college, the university, we have many, many people. People come here just for sports vision. So there's significant interest, and hopefully those people will get out and practice. And I've gotten, just from this class who graduated, I've got a couple emails from people across the country who want to start sports vision programs in their universities where they've gone after graduating. So my hope is that we'll have increased numbers, which means increased information, increased experience, which obviously is going to move the field forward faster. Awareness and understanding of the public's role, public's understanding of vision and performance is critical, because they're what's going to feed this engine of people coming in, being improved, performing better, telling their friends about it, and getting this idea of elite vision and having optimal vision for your sport, something that, you know, everybody wants and everyone comes to try to get wherever they are, Canada, United States, anywhere on the planet, to make a big difference. And then finally, I think if the governments and industries get interested in this as the driving thing, and they recognize that we can actually save lives on the street by having people be a little bit better drivers, that I think now becomes something that really hits home to the deepest core of everybody, safety and well-being as we try to, you know, live our lives. And that's something that I think is coming also. I spent an hour on the phone yesterday with a group that represents major corporations, and they're interested in pushing driving forward, driving vision forward, so we get more information and we can do a better job there as well. So I look at the next 10 years as extremely exciting, and as we said in the beginning, things don't happen slowly. Things get faster and faster the farther out we get, and I think the 10 years coming forward will be equal to 25 years that we've had in the past in sports vision.
Oh, fantastic stuff. Digging into that untapped potential. Dr. Labey, thanks for your time today and all the great work you and your team are doing there at the State University of New York.
My pleasure, Jeff. Good to be with you and look forward to speaking again.
Well, there you go. Sport vision, everyone. A huge area of untapped potential. And as Dr. Labey mentioned, we're probably only at a grade 2 level when it comes to our total understanding of how this entire system works in terms of how to train it, how to make it more efficient, and truly how the connection between our eyes and the brain and the body really, really work. One of the things that is a top priority in all of our programs, especially when we start training our movement and movement patterns, is giving our athletes the best possible opportunity to maximize visual input. The quality of visual input will dictate and determine almost everything that happens in terms of your decision, reaction time, and your overall performance. So such a great conversation to have at this point in time. So have to thank Dr. Labey for that. Again, you can get the podcast and share it with your friends. It's on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and right here on Radio Influence for sure. And if you do have questions, comments, or smart remarks, get to us at our website, crushperformance.com. You can write to us there. Info@crushperformance is the website. Follow us on Twitter @JeffCrush and on Facebook, go to Crush Performance. And if you have a topic you'd like us to look into, let us know as well. If we like your topic, we may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to the idea. So let us know for sure. And we've had some great ones over the last few weeks. Last week, we just had an unbelievable War on Sugar episode with Dr. Andoise Allen as we really cracked down on the sport drink and the fuel systems that are impacting human performance inside of sport. There's a massive, massive misconception out there as to how carbohydrate sugars work inside the human body and the impact they have on sport performance. It is not calories in, calories out, and it's not as simple as sugar provides energy. The sources of the sugar, the activity you're involved in, your body type, the time of day, nutrient timing, all these things come into play when we're trying to tap into new levels of human performance. And make no mistake, the brain is in control of the entire system. Great conversation last week with Dr. Allen. Coming up in the next few weeks, our quest for a better understanding of what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance continues. We're going to look deep into the heart of sleep science. We're going to look at new technologies that are helping our football players improve their safety and reduce the risk of concussions and head injuries. And we're going to look deep into the mind to get a better understanding of how the brain works when we're in competition and in activity, and some unbelievable new tools that are helping us train the brain in live time. That's all coming up in the next few weeks. I want to thank you for tuning in today, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Crush Performance.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.